Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley, who was at Craven Cottage on Saturday. This episode, we'll be looking back at the disappointing 3-1 loss for Fulham against Nottingham Forest. There's much to get through. I am actually glad that I watched the replay today. That's why we're doing this show a little bit later. The replay was not available until later, so David and I are now doing the show. But Mr. Hulley, welcome back to the show, and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody. Well, I think it's a shame that Yanis can't join us, but it's fortunate as well because I think his cats would really be, like, scowling today after what we saw yesterday. You know, very disappointing. And, of course, how Fulhamish was it that Anthea came all the way from New Zealand to see Fulham and we lost?
Yep.
You know, that just, you know, it's the hope that gets
disappointing.
You. That's what I said to her yesterday. It's the hope that gets you every time with Fulham, I'm afraid. Just when you think perhaps, you know, we've turned the corner and everything and we've got a winnable home match against a team right near us in the table, basically. And so, you know, I'm going to explain in the show today why not only, you know, the table never lies. I think maybe you could say the table does lie, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay. You were actually texting me or messaging me a little bit about how the table maybe lies in a certain case. We definitely will discuss it. You and I were disagreeing about that, but that's fine. That's what's great about doing the show is we can disagree. David, I'm going to share my thoughts, but I want to get your opening thoughts as well on the match. So let's start with you. You were there, so share with me what you witnessed yesterday at Craven Cottage.
Obviously very disappointing. Conceded 3 goals at home to a team, you know, again, it was like the Fulhamish thing, a team that hasn't won away for a while. Don't score a lot of goals away from home, I believe. And we've conceded 3 against them. And, of course, at 2-0 at half-time as well, you know, they really had us under the thumb and we had no choice but to sort of, you know, throw caution to the wind and try and change things to win it, and it wasn't successful ultimately. It's left us more exposed, if anything. But, you know, the problem for me is what I saw was we had a team of, you know, very much a team of individuals, different system every week, sometimes different players, maybe several factions within the team, I don't know. Some people get on, some people don't. There just wasn't the kind of the workmanship, there wasn't the movement, the commitment, the slickness about it. Forest were much slicker. They moved around better. And, you know, as we talked about on Friday, you know, Lansbury was the danger. Everything seemed to emanate from him. He played literally as a striker or just behind Dexter Blackstock. And he was really, you know, instrumental in everything. And we didn't manage to stop him. And we had, you know, people in there, defensive midfielders, who, you know, should be really doing that, but didn't do their job. Third goal sums it up, really. You know, he just nips front of Amabieta. Who was tracking him back? I don't know. And this was a team that were up for it much more. You know, this is where statistics as well. Statistics don't tell you the story. According to statistics, we were the better team, supposedly. We had much more shots. But when you watch the match, I don't think you could say that. I didn't even feel that we deserved a draw yesterday, unfortunately. There was only really one team in it, and that's really, really sad. Really sad. But, you know, this is why I say that, you know, maybe the table does lie. Because when you look at the two teams, you think, well, why are Forest down there? Do they deserve to be down there? They played like, you know, top-of-the-table team compared to us yesterday. By comparison, really, they were much, much more organised and better. And for us, you know, maybe we're not actually as good as the table says. The only reason we are, you know, where we are and not lower is because we have 2 of the best goal scorers in the league. As regards the best of the team, I don't know. The rest of the team, sorry. You know, maybe none of them are good enough for the championship, literally. You know, and there's a few examples. We'll talk about that as well. But, you know, you start to wonder, are any of these players good enough? And I was speaking earlier to our friend Stuart Roberts, and he's kind of coming to the same conclusion as well. You know, do we actually have anyone who's good enough? If it wasn't for the goals of McCormack and Dembele, or even one of them, we would be snookered. We would be relegated now. So the table almost has been kind to us, in a way. Because it's only our goals that has kept us there. Every other aspect of our play, especially our defence, and we should be, you know, dead and buried, really. So, you know, maybe the table has been kind to us.
Very interesting take, David. You know, I disagree with you on the position. I actually think Fulham should be much higher. I go back to when Kit was sacked and all that time in between Kit and Savica Jokanović. I think that's what did us in. You're right. We do have two players that we lean on a tremendous amount. But also, if you look on the flip side, we should be much higher because of all those goals that are being scored. It really is the defense that has let us down. Organization, playing together as a team, that really is what let us down. And listen, we're going to be doing several shows after the season ends, and we're going to be breaking down exactly what went wrong and what needs to happen moving forward. And one of them is really going to be talking about what you've been talking about, and I said this on a prior show, David. David Hulley, right again, because, David, you called this from the beginning. You said maybe the players aren't good enough. I'm going to agree with you in one way and disagree with you in another way. I think that you're right that they're not good enough for Fulham, meaning that they don't all fit together. I think that they are good players. They didn't just get bad overnight. For whatever reason, they all don't fit together, and they're not playing well as a team. So, in a way, I think they are good championship players, but they're not good for Fulham together, if that makes any sense. So I do think that there is a house cleaning that needs to be done. And what I watched on this replay, and I'm glad that I had a chance to watch the replay, is I saw two players impact the match tremendously. We're talking about Henry Lansbury and, of course, Robert Tesh as well. Both of these players really just destroyed Fulham in this match. And what you saw, again, I'm talking about these two players, but what you saw, and you really talked about it, David, one team playing together as a team, a team that is on the same page, a team that was well-prepared, well-organized, and had a game plan, and they executed it very well. Then you have another team, like you said, very well, playing as individuals. And listen, Nottingham Forest stopped Fulham from playing. They knew what they had to do. They executed it, and Fulham needed to change things up at halftime, and it was too late by then, and I guess you could say it wasn't good enough because they only scored one goal. But I have to give credit to Nottingham Forest. They came in here, they did what they had to do, and they got the victory. They deserved the victory. They were the better team on this day. Do I think that they're a more talented team? Maybe not. But it doesn't matter because they all play together as a unit, and Fulham were playing like a bunch of individuals trying to figure things out, trying to figure a way, and they could not find a way, David. So I look at it as teams – one team that really knew who they were and one that is searching to find who they are. Does that make sense?
It does. It takes me back to a friend of mine who supports the Ha-Ha's up the road. And
yep.
He said twice this season, QPR have made Fulham look like Barcelona. And, you know, I can understand that. And it was, I know it's not quite as maybe as widespread as that, but, you know, that was a bit of a case with Forest. We made them look like a much better team than they are. Because, you know, ultimately, the table doesn't lie. You know that. You are
right.
Where you are, and you deserve to be there because of one thing or another.
Right. Right, go ahead, David.
So, you know, it's they deserve to be there, but yet they looked a much better team. It's not just about, you know, the togetherness. It's the slickness. It's the movement. We had no movement again. We're so static. But the reason why I say that, you know, maybe the players aren't good enough. If you watch that match carefully, look at the technical ability, controlling the ball, simple passes. It's not to do with a game plan or tactics. It's to do with football basics. You know, and Ince couldn't control the ball and pass it half the time. Even Riemann, he's usually one of the better ones. And, you know, he kept mispassing the ball. And it was endemic throughout the whole team, with the exception maybe, you know, of a couple of bright spots. And it was, to be honest with you, it was in the main, it was the same old faces again who probably, you know, stuck their head above the parapet and you saw them and you saw what they were trying to do. But the rest of them, I don't know. It really does concern me that, you know, whether we actually have anyone who is good enough. And even questions, you know, all the way back to the goalkeeper. And, you know, someone asked me yesterday, did they think Bettinelli was at fault for the first? I said no, because I thought it was a well-executed shot into the top corner. Yeah, it was very quickly taken. But, you know, even people are asking questions on social media about Bettinelli as well. And of course, we all crave for him to come back because Lonergan, we realised, was limited in his abilities. So even, you know, even right down to Bettinelli, you know, we almost need a whole new team if you look at everybody's individual issues, with the exception of a couple. And
right.
People like Scott Parker can't play forever. McCormack, he could be an interesting influence, that he may be one of the people who makes the squad apparently as divisive as it is. You know, we talk about camps within camps, unsettling characters, and, you know, and sometimes the finger is pointed at him. You know, but, you know, we talked about this on the preview show. Do we take it and shut up because of the goals, or do we say, no, we don't want this? But then where do the goals come from if we get rid of him, if Dembele goes? You know, it's some real, real big questions in the summer. Thankfully,
absolutely,
we're safe now, so, you know, we don't have to worry about that. But next season is not going to be an easy season unless there's some really big things happen, big changes.
Well, there has to be huge changes. I totally agree with you, David. And I look forward to talking to you and our other co-hosts about that and seeing the team that Savisa built, because he has a huge job on his hands. He has to break this thing up and build it back up. That's not easy. But I also saw Chris Hughton do it last year. He did it. He built his team. He came in around the same time that Savisa came in with Fulham, around the same time, and his team ended 20th. Look at them now. It can be done. But he needs to find the right players to play the way he wants them to play. And I don't think he has those players. I'm not giving him a free pass, not at all. He deserves criticism just like everyone else. But I want to see him build his own team, and then I can look at it and say, you know what, he's the right guy for us. I believe he is, but honestly, it'll be this season where he'll prove it to all of us. Is he the right guy for Fulham Football Club? It'll be the team he builds this upcoming season, and we can move on from this season that we're dealing with now, which has been horrible. All right, David, let's start from the beginning. Let's start with the starting 11. You pretty much nailed this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd love them to go back to the 3-5-2, but I didn't see that coming in a million miles. I thought we would be with his new kind of formation, which had worked three games on the trot, obviously. And bar two differences in personnel, he actually decided he picked Ream rather than Garber at left back. I mean, Garber didn't even make the 18 ultimately. And in midfield, he actually chose Hyman, where I thought he'd probably go with perhaps a more kind of solid choice in someone like Tynecliffe or even LBC.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, Kearney came back as I thought he would. Maddow came back and Amad Bietta at the back. And he did keep Fredericks at right back to give us that thing. So I wasn't too disappointed with the starting 11. It was along the lines of what I'd seen, and on the basis that supposedly it's a solid team and we could stop Forrest playing and neutralise, you know, Parker or Ince would neutralise Lansbury. I thought, well, yes, we have a chance here. You know, they're where they are for a reason. They haven't won away, you know, very much. You know, and of course they were singing to us, you know, how rubbish must you be, we're winning away. They're singing our song at us, you know. It was they really rubbed their noses in it. But yeah, it was much as I expected in the starting lineup. Not ideal what I would like, you know, if we had the right players, I think we could do something better, but with the players we have and what he's been doing lately, yeah, it was pretty much as expected.
You're going to love this, David. Do you know who Fulham miss? I think a great deal. You're going to love this. And you might agree or you might disagree. I think Fulham really missed James Husband. I think this is a perfect game where they missed James Husband, David. Tim Ream's not a left back. Let's just say it. Or not good enough left back. You and I have been messaging back and forth. I don't know if he's a good enough center back either. I don't know what his position is. This goes back to what people from Bolton were saying about him. They don't know what his best position. He's a footballer, but what is his best position? For me, he's not a good enough left back. So for me, I would rather go with a guy that can go forward, and he might be a little suspect defensively, but I think he makes up for that going forward, and that was James Husband. Unfortunately, he had to go back to his parent team, then he was loaned out to someone else. I think Fulham missed James Husband, David. That would allow them to play the 3-5-2 better.
Certainly. I mean, the 3-5-2, as you know, we talked about it on Friday again, the strengths and the weaknesses, the wing-backs, you know, because that gives you that width and it gives you that ability to pull them back and have five at the back, theoretically. But you need players who can play that role. It suits Fredericks pretty well because of the way he is. He's not the best defender, like we said, maybe with Husband, maybe not the best defender, but good going forward and quick. But you've got to have people who are quick because you need them to get up the line and to take people on, and you need them to get back when you're defending. But we struggled. And I mean, Tim Ream, I feel sorry for the guy. I've never actually had a chance to speak to him. I have spoke to lots of the players, as you know, but never spoke to him. I'm sure he's a lovely guy, a family man and everything, you know, new father and stuff, represents his country. But, you know, we're kind of thinking now, well, he's not really a left-back and he's not really a centre-back, so what are we going to do with him? And I feel a bit bad because, you know, I've been on his case almost from day one. I can remember Kyle being on the show and Kyle saying, wasn't he the best defender at the club or something? And I had to bite my tongue that day because, not that I want to fall out with Kyle, but I just completely disagreed with that. Because, you know, from day one I've been on his case, and Stearman as well, but Ream particularly. And it's a shame because I think maybe his only role is the left-hand side of three if you're going to play three at the back.
Right.
And as that stands,
I think he could do that,
him,
David. I think he could do that. If you went three in the back, I think actually he could fill that role. I think that would be the role for him, honestly.
Well, unfortunately, he did do it second half yesterday, and he was culpable on the third goal, so potentially.
So there you go.
I'm not even sure about that, but yes, I think out of the three positions, that's probably the only one that I would feel comfortable with him in, really, because at left back, you just lose too much. In the modern day, full-backs need to get forward, especially the way Fulham play with our inverted wide men in midfield, usually. You've got to have a full-back who can offer you something different. Otherwise, we're just trying to go with a battering ram through the middle all the time, and it's easy to defend, or it seems to be easy to defend.
Right, David, and this goes back, and again, listen, I think Tim Ream is a quality footballer. Mike Gregg has said that a great deal. You understand that, too. It's what is his role, and maybe he was just not the right fit for Fulham Football Club, like you said. Playing the way that they want to play, they need someone that can attack from a wing back, or, you know, if you're going to be a wing back, or if you're, well, he would never be a wing back, but he'd be, if he's going to be a left back, he has to have that ability to be able to move forward. And that's just not his strength. And it's unfortunate because I think he's a good player. I just don't think he's the right fit for Fulham Football Club. And I think that's the problem with several of these players. I just don't think that they're the right fit for Fulham Football Club. All the pieces don't fit together. That's what I watched on the replay. I watched the team where all the pieces fit together, David, and that was Nottingham Forest, and all the pieces do not fit together, and that was Fulham Football Club. That, to me, was the difference. That's when we're talking about a team playing as one and a team playing as individuals. You could see the difference. You mentioned a team that looked very fluid. That was Nottingham Forest. They weren't dominant. They weren't coming at us at all times. They weren't having the ball the entire time. But when they had the ball, they knew what to do with it, and they could take advantage of Fulham's weaknesses. That's exactly what they did, and they deserve to win 3-1, honestly. So, anyways, let's get into the match, David, and let's go to the first half. I just jotted down a couple things. I obviously want you to really break down exactly what happened in the first half, but we could start here. We could talk about Fulham starting up decently. I mean, not great, but decent, you know, in the beginning of the game. But in the 19th minute, you had Ross McCormack having a free kick that was nicely saved by the goalkeeper, Doris De Vries. He did a very nice job there. But unfortunately, 4 minutes later, here comes the goal. It comes off of a free kick from Henry Lansbury, and Robert Tesh is all alone, David. This is a well-taken goal. Let me stress this. But I will say this. Robert Tesh, there was no one around him. Wide open. And he really struck it nicely, and they got the goal. They're up early again on a free kick, very very early into the match, 23 minutes in. They're up 1-0, and unfortunately, they made it 2-0 in the 43rd minute when Emerson Hyman fouled Robert Tesh in the box, and Henry Lansbury scores on the penalty to make it 2-0. Now, what's interesting, the final minute of the half, Tom Kearney almost cut the lead in half as his shot was tipped over the bar by De Vries. That was an opportunity missed. Then in stoppage time, there was a situation where Ross McCormack was fouled right around the edge of the box, David. They called it outside the box. I've watched it a few times. Before I share my thoughts on it, I definitely want to get your view of it. I've watched it many times in the replay, so I'll let you explain your thoughts on it before I share mine. Okay? And then, you know, then of course you got McCormack taking the free kick, and unfortunately, it just hits the post, and Fulham go go into the half down 2-0. All right, David, you take us through your observations of the first half.
Well, my memory of the first half was, we started brightly, almost straight away, first minute or two. Fredericks took the guy on the outside, I think. A couple of times Fredericks showed, the thing that he's good at. We know he's not good at other things. He had a very rash challenge in the first half. He was probably a bit lucky to see yellow the way he flew in. Thankfully, I think because he didn't going over the ball that he got away with it, but it could have potentially been a red. It was a very silly challenge. But, Fredericks did go on the outside and pull the ball back and look dangerous. And we had a couple of chances, but obviously the best one was the McCormack thing that hit the post, well taken, right at the end there, the free kick. The shot by Kearney, I thought the goalkeeper made a meal of it. I think on the commentary, even Sean or Jim says, "What's the keeper doing there?" I'm sure I heard that. Because he tried to make it look spectacular. It's a very, very simple tip over. But as regards the main incidents, I think there was a question about the foul for the first goal. Was it a foul or not? Some people were moaning that it was a bad decision to give a free kick. But the problem was, and this is, I'm going to have to, blame someone here, and I have a feeling this is partly why he was withdrawn at half time. But Emerson Hyman, I think it was his man on that free kick. He was asleep. Lansbury's pulled it back. Guy on the edge of the area, not that far out, obviously, connected very, very well, and it's gone literally top corner. I don't think Bettinelli stood a chance, not with the pace of the shot or the direction of the shot. I think I'm sure Emilio asked me that, and cause, I'm the first to jump on the goalkeeper if I think they're faulty, but I don't think there's anything Bettinelli could have done in that case. It was a well-worked routine, but we were asleep. Hyman was asleep. And then, of course, a little bit later, Hyman has blotted his copybook again. But saying that, I've watched this a couple of times because I wasn't sure on the day, and I think contact initially was outside the area. It was very close, so obviously it continued into the area, fell over into the area, but I think the very first touch was just outside the line. So technically, it was a bad decision by the ref. Should have been a free kick, not a penalty.
Okay.
But this is, we have this every week. We have every week it shouldn't have been a penalty, or it wasn't really a penalty, or the guy dived. But we put ourselves in that situation.
Absolutely.
There's no argument whatsoever that it was careless by Hyman. He has tripped the guy. I don't think anyone's going to say that it was a dive or he made a meal of it, really. I think it was definitely a free kick, not a penalty. But we're giving the refs easy decisions to make when we do stuff like that. So, of course, despite Bettinelli going the right way, we were 2-0 down. And you've got a big hurdle to climb. Crowd were getting restless, obviously, as well. As I say, we had another free kick as well that I know Greg was periscoping it. I saw it come up, and I think the ball went into the wall or something, and I said to Mike, was it worth the periscoping? And actually, the highlight, of course, was Mike hitting the post at half-time, obviously. Mike did a better job than half our players. He got closer than most of them with a spectacular effort to hit the post. I'm sure you saw that, obviously.
I did see it.
Mind you, if you saw the rest of the people that Mike was playing with, Mike looked like Messi compared to them, I think.
He did.
Yeah. They weren't too good, I'm afraid, Russ. I don't want to be horrible or anything, because I know it's a thing about keeping fit and everything. It's not about football stars.
Sure.
But, they weren't too clever with most of their efforts, but Mike's was the best. But in all seriousness, a very disappointing half, obviously. Say we had a couple of chances, but nothing really, obviously, there was that sort of bit of a scramble, wasn't it, when that ball came across from Fredericks and things. We say we had the Kearney one over the tipped over the bar, McCormack's free kick hit against the post. And then, of course, just before half-time, which was that incident, was the penalty shout. But I've watched it, and again, definitely contact outside the area.
I agree, David.
I'm
glad that you said that, David. I'm glad that you said that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, because I agree with you.
Yeah. From the Hammersmith end, I thought it probably was outside the area, but there's no way I could have told, obviously, because I'm looking at it from 100 yards away or something, but I've watched it.
It was outside.
Whatever there was, it was definitely outside the area. I'm not sure if it was a leg or whether it was a pullback. The referee signaled a pullback. I would suggest that McCormack's made a meal of it a bit. I would suggest that, because I didn't see a lot of contact. But whatever did happen was outside the area, so it was the correct decision in that case. It's just a shame that the one for Hyman was given, where I think that was outside as well, but very just. It's very, very close.
Okay, very good there, David. And that's why I wanted you to explain it, because I watched it several times. And listen, you know, I'm a Fulham supporter. I wish I could tell you that he was inside the box, but based on what I saw, he was outside the box, so I have to call it like I see it. What's interesting about the Hyman situation is that I've seen a still picture of it, and I see where you're going on that. Steve Lillard, actually, as a referee, he was kind of, you know, he wasn't sure because it's right on the line to him. It's very close. It was very close. So that's what made that one a little bit more difficult. I think the McCormack one was a little bit farther out, but again, it's still fairly close. So that's why, before we end the show, we haven't done this in a long time, David. I want your analysis of the ref before we end the show, okay? I want you to rate the ref. We haven't done that in a while. I want you to rate the ref, okay?
Okay.
Okay, very good. Let's move to the second half, my friend. And we have to start with the two substitutions. LVC and Matt Smith come on. Tom Kearney and Emerson Hyman go off. That's how the second half began. Okay, let's start in the 62nd minute. Obviously, there was a huge change here. I forgot to mention that with the change of bringing the players on, they did go to three at the back, David, which definitely won't want your thoughts on how that all worked out overall. But as I mentioned, let's go right to the goal in the 62nd minute. Matt Smith scores on a header. It was a goal set up initially from play beginning with a corner. Right before the corner, Moussa Dembele had a nice shot on target as well. In the 70th minute, however, you know, just when you're thinking Fulham are back in the match, you have the third goal from Nottingham Forest from Henry Lansbury. Again, this is set up by Eric Lehi, but it was a very nice goal by Henry Lansbury. He was a major factor in this game. I was scared about it going into the match, and unfortunately, he really proved me right because he played very well against Fulham. Fulham actually had a few opportunities to score after they went down 3-1, but just couldn't convert. The most notable to me was Michael Mantle's header, play off of a free kick. But, you know, again, they, for whatever reason, Fulham could not cut the lead from 3-1. And that's how the match ended, my friend. And I also want to get your thoughts on the ref. There was a questionable call on Matt Smith on the box. So definitely want your thoughts on that because Gentleman Jim went a little crazy during that incident late in the match. So want your overall observations and talk about some of those key moments that I just brought up to you.
Well, obviously, yeah, we knew, I think, Matt Smith was coming on, and we're sort of speculating who's going to be going off. And then, of course, LVC came on as well. And at first, we thought, well, how is this going to work? Is McCormack going to go like left midfield, as he does sometimes, and LVC go right? But in fact, no, we saw a distinct change in Fredericks push forward, and we went to three at the back with LVC effectively as a left wing back. So a little bit of a surprise there. Obviously, I would have thought, had he had any idea that he was going to go to that, he would have actually had Garbutt on the bench, unless, of course, he was injured, which wasn't stated pre-match. But you'd think if he had any idea of switching to that, he'd at least have a player to play that position rather than, you know, a midfielder as playing, you know, a right-footed midfielder playing as a left wing-back, which is a bit strange. But, you know, from the start, it was quite obvious. And in fact, a lot of the time, McCormack was actually playing off Smith as well as Dembele. So it was actually a 3-4-3 more than a 3-4-1-2 sometimes, although McCormack did sort of drop deep out of it some of the time, and then also Dembele did drop deep some of the time. And then there was actually a frustrating bit of the game where Dembele was in midfield almost at times, where they're hoofing long balls to Matt Smith and he's wondering what they were actually doing. But now we switched to the 3-5-2, yeah? And you know, we did get the result from it. And say we had a, you know, the from the corner, the ball came back out to McCormack and he floated a great ball into the far post for Smith to head home, a trademark goal for him. And there were a few other occasions where Smith was dangerous, but unfortunately, you know, as I said to you pre-show, we switched to a system where we had width and wide players getting forward, but then we resorted to hitting a lot of long balls down the middle. We didn't really use our width very much. A couple of times, but not very much. You'd think in an ideal world, if they could have got Fredericks and LBC into good crossing positions, we could have put a lot of crosses in for Smith, which are always easier for an attacker to sort of, you know, head the ball, which is, you know, coming across, than to try and, you know, play with your back to goal looking just for flick-ons, where you're reliant on winning the header and being able to direct it sort of in the direction that the other player is. There were a couple of reasonable flick-ons. I remember there was the one that led to a chance, I think, for Dembele, where it was flicked onto McCormack and he knocked it through to Dembele. And, of course, Dembele had a really good chance where he was put through by McCormack, but he just hesitated a bit long and they got a block in on him. Just sort of seemed to hold the ball just for a second too long there. Of course, Maddle as well had the header at the far post, which was quite well saved. Matt Smith had another header that went fairly tamely straight to the goalkeeper. But there wasn't, you know, apart from the goal, there wasn't really a lot of chances. For a few minutes after it went to 2-1, we did actually seem to be a little bit more, you know, in the ascendancy. And we thought perhaps if we can nick another goal here, we could go on and win the game. But it wasn't long before the wind was taken out of our sails. And, you know, basically Ream and LBC were both kind of no man's land, and the ball was played between them. And I think it was our friend, was it Lichai or Lichai, however you pronounce it, got the cross in. I don't know, he's got me off now. I'm normally good on these ones, Russ. And, of course, and this was the thing I pointed out before. And then it was just Lansbury or whatever, just nipped in, hasn't he? Nipped in at the, you know, right in front of Amabieta, poke it past Bettinelli. Who was tracking him? Where was Ream? Where was LBC, you know, for the initial thing? LBC was kind of pushed up a bit out of position, I think. Ream hadn't come across. There was just a big gap there, and they exploited that gap. And really, after that point, it was game over. There was a later change where Tunnicliffe and his beard came on to replace Parker, but didn't really see much change. It was just more and more hoofing the ball forwards. There was one incident actually where Fredericks was played a ball through, and it looked like they've had a kick at him in the area. And again, the ref has given it outside. Now, you've seen that now on the replay. I didn't.
I have.
On the highlights, they didn't show it. And I wasn't sure whether there were two aspects to it, whether as he tried to run through, someone's grabbed his shirt, and then there was like, it looked like there could have been a tangle of legs in the area. But the ref certainly gave it for what happened outside. So maybe you can tell me on that one what happened.
I think you just described it, David. I think that they called it back from the initial part of it. But yes, I actually thought he was fouled in the box. So it was that was an interesting call, because I watched that a few times, but I think that they went back to what happened initially.
Yeah, I only saw that once with my eyes live, so I hadn't seen that one yet. But it's annoying because, you know, the ref could have actually played on for the initial tug and then given a penalty for being in the area, but I guess they don't. If they play the advantage, they have to pull it back to the first incident. That was another thing of note. But, you know, despite, you know, the relatively high numbers of shots, and, you know, we had six on target, it wasn't enough. We didn't really trouble the goalkeeper at all. And Forest were pretty comfortable second half. I mean, the long ball system really didn't help that much. In the main, we just played into their hands and we wasted a lot of the ball. If you're going to use Matt Smith, I think you've got to play with the width as well and get crosses in for him, not just, you know, one-dimensionally hack long balls straight down the middle all the time. We saw some strength. Even Michael Maddle was getting forward at times down the wing. He was trying to be a wing-back as well. So we had Stearman trying to be a wing-back and Fredericks and Michael Maddle. And clearly Michael Maddle's, you know, his commitment's in the right place. He's, again, one of the players that I'm going to, you know, exonerate from the blame in this game, even though he's part of a defence that let in three goals, because, you know, you could see his efforts and everything.
Yeah.
First half, Dembele, I thought, was brilliant, actually. He had some great runs and stuff and was strong and quite quick. Second half, he seemed to fade a bit. Parker, of course, was his usual self, but, again, it doesn't always work. The pieces weren't fitting into the jigsaw. Rowan Ince, he can win the ball, but he couldn't do anything with it. He was wasting possession. His touch was poor. You know, and other people say, like Ream, who are comfortable footballers normally, gave the ball away. Hyman didn't really ever get into the game, I think. Kearney, not a lot either. You know, Frederick's couple of good runs, tried to get himself sent off at one point. You know, Amabieta gave away a few free kicks, got beaten for the third goal. You know, it was a very mixed bag for most of them, really, I think. And as a referee, of course, I saw on Twitter that it was the referee's fault, obviously, that we lost. The referee was useless, or worse, which we won't say, but he was useless, according to a few people. Yeah, of course it was the ref's fault, obviously, you know. Don't blame the players, don't blame the manager, don't blame anyone else. You know, just blame the referee. It's a nice, easy target then, isn't it? So, you know, great, that sums up all our problems. That's why we are where we are. The referees have put us there, yeah, obviously. So I'm being sarcastic,
No, I know you're being sarcastic, David. I wasn't sure, maybe I missed it. Did you talk about the situation with Matt Smith in the box when he went down?
No, I didn't mention that one, actually. It's like one of those ones where it was a little bit of a sandwich for Matt Smith, but they kind of all, there was no obvious kind of pullback or foul. It was just kind of, they're all going for the same ball. And it looked like the player on the right, as you were looking at it, may have knocked into him. But he's a big lad, you know, and I think it's very hard to give something there. You know, where there's something clearly happened, where someone runs past the player and they fall over because there was a trip or whatever, then yes. But it was kind of three people going for the same ball. I didn't see enough there. I didn't see an obvious pullback. So if you're not sure, you don't give it.
Okay.
So I kind of agree there. Much as I'd like to see a penalty, I kind of agree that one wasn't given. I think it's just on the day that borderline decisions have gone against us, as I say. The penalty was given for something that happened just outside the area. The Fredericks one could have been in the area but was just outside the area. The McCormack one was just outside the area. I can remember Gordon Davis playing for Fulham. I can't remember who we played against from the 80s. And the trip was about 5 yards outside the area, but he did about three forward rolls, a triple jump and, I don't know, a high jump, and ended up in the penalty area, and we got a penalty. I can't remember who on earth that was against. So, obviously, Gordon Davis' nickname was Diver. No, sorry, Ivor. I was close there, but yeah, he was our. But he knew how to make them look good, Gordon Davis. He was a great player, and I wouldn't insinuate that he cheated at all. But you know, when he was fouled, he made it look good, I think, and you know, without looking ridiculously stupid like they do these days. But I can remember one match certainly where the initial contact was outside the area, but he made sure it was in, and that's what happened with Forrest, although it was very close. So I think. Yeah, obviously the referee, you know, he got it wrong to his point, but then you have to look at his assistants who also are there. Yeah, only the assistant could have given the decision on McCormack because it was like a line call.
Right.
And really on the Emerson High one as well, because the assistant's on that side, he should be able to see whether the initial contact was outside the air or not. So I think look at the assistants because they're there to assist the referee. That's their job title. That's the nature of the job. I don't think the ref had a shocker particularly. I know a lot of people were moaning about it, but we didn't lose because the referee had a shocker. You know, the referee didn't make us concede three goals. Obviously, the penalty was by virtue of the decision it was given. So maybe you can chalk that one off. But it was a team spirit. It was the way the teams played. It was the way, you know, Forrest played. I wouldn't say it was the best refereeing performance, certainly not. But as I say, we're looking at marginal decisions. It was a marginal decision for me that he gave Fredericks a yellow card, not a red card, because the way he went in was reckless. So, you know, you can look at these things the other way as well. So I think not the best referee, but not the worst.
Okay, just quickly, give me a rating for him. Just overall, you know, again, we used to do this last season. I'm just curious. You'd think that that he did a decent job, you think that he did a terrible job, or is it kind of in the middle, David?
I think I'd give him, a middling 6 out of 10, really.
Okay, very good, my friend, very good. All right, let's, before we go to stats, you know, again, I just want to just mention this, because I'm glad that you talked about this when you look at the second half. When you look at the second half, David, it's something that we talked about. The change at the half, you know, do you think Kit would have made that type of change at the half? Because I definitely want your analysis of Slavisa when we give him a rating. But let me just ask you, because again, this is really changing things up. This is going for the Flick-Ons with Matt Smith, and there were a ton of them. Some of them landed, some of them didn't, but again, it was basically long balls to Matt Smith, and he did the Flick-On. But let me ask you, do you think Kit would have done this?
Kit probably would have left the team longer as they were and done that sort of later on, brought Matt Smith on later on, I would have thought.
Okay.
Knowing Kit, he wasn't very good at making early changes. For me, this was maybe it was too much the other way. I think it was too early to bring on Matt Smith and just hump the ball forward. Maybe maybe a change to 3-5-2. I don't know. They could have done that without changing the forward line.
Okay.
So.
No, I was going to say you're not against going to three at the back. You just don't think bringing on Matt Smith at halftime was the right move.
Well, it's not so much about bringing on Matt Smith. It's about switching to a route one style. If you're going to bring, you can have 3-5-2. Try and use the width. You know, what's the point of having the three? Why did he switch to 3-5-2? What was he actually trying to achieve there? Was it, sacrifice a defender effectively to get a player further forward? Was it to give us more width than we'd been having? Or what? I mean, there's no point in going to 3-5-2 if you're just going to lump it forward, as I said. Because that,
okay.
You don't need anyone wide. You might as well just play, a very, very narrow team. Get rid of your midfielders, as we did a little bit. Play four at the back and play four up front and two in the middle, so that we get everyone for Flick-Ons. You know what I mean? It's not like...
Right.
One thing almost contradicts the other for me. That's the strange thing about it. You use the width. If you're going to do that, use the width and try and get crosses in for Matt Smith as well as long balls, because long balls just get too predictable.
Yeah.
Mix it up a bit.
I hear what you're saying, my friend. All right. I look forward to your rating for Savisa in a little bit. Let's go to the stats fairly quickly. Possession, even, 50% each. Total shots, Fulham had 22. Forest had 13. On target, Fulham had 6. Forest had 5. Corners. It looks like I wrote down, David, I wrote down the wrong number, so I can't give you corners. I screwed that up already. Goldman already, my friend.
6-5.
I'm sorry. Corners was 5-2. I'm sorry about that. Crosses, 22-14.
That was 6-5 with shots, wasn't it? Yes, on target.
Yes, 6-5. Corners was 5-2. Already a Goldman. Well, actually, we're 15 minutes ago. I guess that's not that bad. Tackles, Fulham had 17, Forest had 29, but there have already been other Goldmans, so what the heck. Attempted passes, 435 for Fulham, 446 for Forest. Attacking passes, 340 to 324 in favor of Forest. Aerial duels, 35-17 in favor of Fulham. We know who won most of those aerial duels. And fouls, Forest had 3 more at 19-16. All right, David, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
It stands out that you were trying to read them without laughing after doing a Goldman. You almost distracted yourself there, Russ, I think.
I did.
That was the best bit about the stats, really. Obviously, we can't count Mike Rigg hitting the post. Mike Rigg hit the post. Yeah, Mike Rigg hit the post at halftime. Sorry, Mike. Yeah, Mike Gregg hit the post at halftime, but that one doesn't count in the stats, obviously. Probably knowing Fulham, they probably have done. But, I guess it's, the greater number of shots by far, really, do, and the corners, they kind of do suggest that, we were the more attacking team out of the two. But I just didn't see that. Unless I've gone completely mad and forgot what the game was like, it didn't look like a dominant performance by me in the slightest. So, for me, the stats are lying, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, I don't believe the stats. Someone's made them up. That wasn't a match where we had so much dominance, not really. We they cancelled us out, as you said. They did a job on us. They knew what they were doing. So
yep.
I'm surprised to see that we had so many shots, albeit off target, in a game where, they had the upper hand. The stats were unfair on Forest. I really think they were. They deserve... more parity in the stats, at least, even slightly, to be ahead in the edge, overall edge, I think, yeah?
No, listen, I agree with you. I think this is a match where the stats don't really tell you the story. You're talking about two teams that were playing two different games almost. Like you said, you had one team that was very well organized, and you had another team that got frustrated. Let's call it like it is, David. And I told you this offline. What's interesting is that going forward, Nottingham Forest play with a good amount of purpose. Defending, at times they had everyone behind the ball, but they all had a role. There was nowhere for Fulham to go because they clogged up the middle. And unfortunately, we only had Ryan Fredericks wide, so that really limited what we had to do. We were standing still at times because they were really frustrating us once they got organized. And they got organized very quickly. They got everyone behind the ball, but they quickly could move the ball forward. So this is a team that had a game plan. They really followed it to a T, and that's why they won. The stats really don't show that, but honestly, they were the better team, and they deserve it. And we'll just leave it there, my friend. All right, let's go on to rating the players. We only have about 13 minutes left, David, so if you could give about 5 minutes to rate the players, that would be great.
Yeah. Bessinelli didn't have a lot to do, really. Can't really fault him on the goals, as far as I can see. Penalty, he was a bit unlucky, went the right way, got close to it. First goal was hit very well. Don't think he stood a chance from there. Likewise with the third. Going to give him 6 out of 10. Fredericks, I think I'm going to give him 6 as well. Though, you know, he looked dangerous at times getting forward. There is a question about his fitness for 90 minutes. There's questions about his temperament. As I say, lucky to get a yellow, perhaps. On another day, he could have seen red for that. And you know, it wasn't really his game. He didn't get the service that he needed to do what he's good at as well. Maddle, I thought he was the best of the defenders. I don't think, you know, he was superb because, say, we let 3 in. But on the other hand, it's hard to blame him too much for any of the goals, really. You know, the first being, you know, probably a midfielder should be closing down the scorer. On the second, you know, it was a penalty given away by Heinemann. And on the third, it came from the other side that he was playing on. I thought he looked, you know, solid in the main, did his job pretty well. Unlucky to not to score. I'm going to give him 7. Amabieta, you know, let the guy get in front of him on the third goal. Solid-ish otherwise. Gave away the free kick for the first goal. So I'm going to give him 5.5. I think it was, you know, a bit below par, really. Expecting more from him, really. Ream, for me, he was a big disappointment in defence because, as I say, you expect, if nothing else, some composure on the ball, some place of good passes. But his passing was all over the place. A few times he got forward, it was always kind of looking to get back. He was, you know, getting scared almost, needed to turn back. Definitely question marks on the third goal in Ream's situation. I think I'm going to give him 5 out of 10, which is probably quite generous, really. In terms of the players who played wide, only played a half each. Kenny didn't have a lot of influence. I mean, he was roving around over the pitch like he does. Did have that one shot, but again, didn't really do enough. I don't know why he was taken off, if he had a recurrence of an injury, if it was just purely tactical. Going to give him 5 out of 10 as well, actually, Kearney. Only played half a game. Heinemann, I'm afraid, really. I've got to go heavy on him today because he was responsible both for not marking the guy, I believe, for the first goal, giving away the penalty for the second goal. Really wasn't effective at all. Didn't get much link-up play. Didn't really create much. I'm going to give him a 4 out of 10. He was the one that was the least surprised to be withdrawn at half-time. Parker battled away as ever. Did what he could, but wasn't enough yesterday. Sometimes you notice he was sitting back and Ince was more forward. Do question that, actually, that tactic, or whether it should be the other way round. I thought he did okay, Parker. Not his most inspired performance, but I would give him 6.5, I think. Ince, a bit of a disappointment for me. He's big and strong and he got in the way. You know, he broke things up. But he didn't use the ball at all well, gave the ball away too easily, misplaced passes and everything. didn't protect the back enough. I'm going to give him 5 out of 10 as well. Then, obviously, the front two, McCormack, huffed and puffed, apart from hitting the post and setting the ball up for Smith. Not one of his better games. He was busy, but not good enough, really. You know, very sort of average 6 out of 10 for me. Dembele, I thought first half he was actually our standout performer. You know, he really ran the channels well, caused a few problems, a few good dribbles with the ball. He was strong and he was quick, showed the kind of qualities that we've seen, you know, Simeon having the under-18s even, brought that over. He looked dangerous, most dangerous player, but second half, I think he faded quite a bit, or they changed their tactics and managed to stop him. And you know, disappointing that perhaps he didn't get a goal there on that chance he had where he took too long. I think I'll give him 6.5 out of 10 for me. In terms of subs, I think we can rate, you know, Smith and LBC as they both played a yeah. half a match. Smith, very, very kind of route one tactics for him. I mean, we know what to expect from him. I think he's actually a better footballer than that. I think he can, you know, he can play the ball on the ground if given a chance, but he really didn't have the chance yesterday. But he did at least do what no one else did for Fulham. He put the ball in the back of the net. I'll give him 7 out of 10 if nothing else for that, because he tried his best. You know, it wasn't his fault that we played Route 1 football directly. You know, that's what they did. And he did his best in difficult circumstances, trying to, you know, claw the match back when we were losing it. LBC, couple of bright runs down the wing, but again, question marks over his positioning and everything. You know, letting the man go for their third. He came into a difficult situation, so you've got to be a bit sorry for him, I suppose, coming on at 2-0 down. I'll give him 6 out of 10 for that. I'm not going to rate Tunnicliffe. Didn't really play that much. Wouldn't be fair to do him. So, I mean, out of that, really, it's between, I don't know, between Maddle and Dembele maybe as my man of the matches. It's difficult to throw either. Maybe Parker as well. Maybe even Smith, but I don't think Smith is, you know, he wasn't in influence over the whole match. Dembele faded in the second half. So I don't know, it's very difficult. I would probably actually give it to Maddle because he's the only one who looked like he was, you know, a proper footballer out there for the whole match.
Okay, very good there, David. Very good. And so is it safe to say that you hope that Fulham sign him permanently this summer?
Well, from what I've seen of the defence so far, most certainly he's, you know, by far, you know, the most organised defender I've seen, really, out of all the ones we have.
You know what, David? I agree with you. And as we know, David Holley is always right, or right again. David Holley,
yeah,
right again. That's the catchphrase, David Holley, right again. All right, David. Let's now talk about Slavisa. I'm curious your thoughts on him. I want you to rate him for this match. Like I mentioned, he made those substitutions at the half. I don't, based on your analysis, doesn't sound like you're completely sold on the halftime substitutions, how it turned out, but overall, rate the manager or the head coach.
Well, you know, we've got loads of players who aren't good enough, and the refs all hate us, so it's not Slavisa's fault, so we can't mark Slavisa down too much, can we, on that showing. I mean, Slavisa was pretty much true to form with his selection. It was kind of as expected. He brought back, you know, people like Maddle, who, you know, have proven to be quite useful and in our recent run. So I can't fault overall his selection, really. You could say that maybe LBC should have started, or Tunnicliffe instead of Heinemann. You know, you could argue at left back if Garbutt should have played there, but not too much to argue about. So the basic selection was okay. Can't really question that. What you can question, I suppose, is the tactics and the half-time changes. And I think, as I say, to me, it was a bit too early to go Route 1 from half-time. You know, give it 15 minutes. Maybe change the system. Try the 3-5-2 scenario. You know, keep Kearney on if he was fit for another, you know, 15 minutes. Let him play in that central role behind the two strikers once the wing-backs are on. Then, you know, if things are still not, you know, working out, then perhaps make the change, you know, with someone like Smith up front. It's a massive change of system. But as I said, for me, bringing the wing backs on and then just going long ball football to Smith in the main, it was an incompatible sort of change. It kind of contradicted itself. So that's the thing I would question. But I do feel for Slavisa that, you know, I think he realises the enormity of the task now that we've got, you know, a poor squad in many areas. And, you know, he must be pulling his hair out what to do with it. So I don't think it was his best tactical thing. But then again, he tried something at half-time. It didn't really come off. It could have come off. We got a goal back. But after that, it didn't work. So I'm prepared to give him 7 out of 10 on the basis that, you know, he tried, you know, reasonable efforts to make things work, but it didn't really quite turn out. But at least he did try something.
Okay. And I understand that, David, and I actually agree with your assessment. It might not have worked, like you said. Maybe it contradicted himself, but at least he was trying to do something. You know, he didn't go in at halftime just say, you know what, we're just going to send out the same team. I actually like a head coach that is willing to make changes, even if they're forced. You know, he was forced to do something. I don't think Kit would have done this at halftime. I think he might have done it, say, maybe the 65th or 70th minute. I do like the fact that Slavisa will do it earlier. All right, my friend, we only have around 3 minutes left. Final thoughts.
Well, if you don't want me to have to dial back in, we could end it here, of course, and hope the next week's better.
Okay, very good, David. What I will do, again, we still have 3 minutes left. I'm just going to share my final thoughts, and it's something that I actually have been getting ready for, preparing for, because we're going to have several shows after the season ends. Cottage Talk doesn't, and it actually goes into overdrive, because we're going to be doing a few shows to review the season, but we're also going to be doing shows that are going to be single-topic shows, and I'm just going to name them real quickly. And please feel free to share your thoughts on them on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, because, you know, I want your feedback on them. And I actually put them on the Cottage Talk Cottage Talk Facebook page. These are the topics. Do you think Shai Khan is the right owner for Fulham Football Club? That's number one. Are you sold on Slavisa Jokanović? That's number two. Number three would be, who should stay and who should go revisit? We're going to look back at that at the end of the season. And the fourth is going to be Mike Riggs' first season as director of football for Fulham. We're going to analyze that season with him in charge of basically picking the groceries for Fulham. So we're going to talk about all that. Those are the four topics. I want your feedback. So please do share your feedback on it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Should we be doing these shows? Because I really want to do them, but I want to get your thoughts on them. David, we have less than 2 minutes. What are your thoughts about us doing these specialty shows after the season ends?
No, I think we need to focus on all these issues and try and see what the consensus is. I mean, has Mike Rigg been a success? I think that sounds like it on the face of it. It's a very easy show to predict what people will say, but you never know. Someone might have different ideas. You know, and as I say, where does the finger point? We've had these questions loads of times. Do we look at the owner? Do we look at Mike Rigg? Do we look at Alistair McIntosh? Do we look at the manager? Do we look at the team? Is it a combination of all of them? So, yeah, it's going to be quite fun going through these things.
It is. It is. And we're going to tackle them individually. So I think that makes it even better, because we could really get into the issue, get into the topic. So we're going to take a single topic, and they're big topics, and we're going to really spend one show each talking about them. We're going to try to get to the root of the problem of Fulham Football Club and try to figure out what they need to do moving forward to get them where we want them to be. So that's going to be after the season ends, but we have plenty to do. Like I said, after the season ends, Cottage Talk goes into overdrive. All right, David, time to end the show. Great job, my friend. Great job. For David Holly, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, my friend. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks, Russ. Cheers, everyone.
Take care.